Welcome to Pit Pass Moto, the show that keeps you up to speed on the latest in motorcycling and brings...
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's the biggest names in motorcycle racing right to you. I'm PJ Doran.
And I'm Dave Selecki.
This week, we have Deputy Race Director for Moto America, Walter Walker, on the show with us. We look forward to talking to him. Moto America, as you know, is now a proud sponsor of Pit Pass. We enjoy having them as a sponsor, and I enjoy attending races with them. Upcoming this very weekend, we have Road America #2, the second race at Moto America this season, this time with fans, and this time also including Vintage Moto Fest. They're combining the two events to make one super event up in Elkhart Lake, Wisconsin. If you have a moment, if you have the weekend off, get out there, go check it out. The vintage stuff is insanely cool, on top of Moto America's already deep and diverse competition calendar for the weekend. You're going to see many, many classes of motorcycles headlined, of course, by the 190 mile an hour plus super bikes at Road America. You get to watch them do that actual speed, and it's insane when the pack goes by at 190. Get there, watch it live. They'll have Super Sports. They'll have Super Stock 1000. There's Twins Cup. There's the lightweight class with the up-and-coming racers racing on 300s and 400 equivalent bikes. Moto America just puts on one heck of a show. There's going to be stunt shows. There's going to be live bands. There's an arm wrestling tournament. So much to do and see at that track. The food is amazing. The drinks are amazing. And hopefully, fingers crossed, we'll have some great weather. So get out there to Road America and check it out this very weekend. And if you can't for some reason, by all means, get on any of the many ways that you can watch this stuff live online. Moto America Live Plus is the app I have on my phone, so I can watch everything from qualifying throughout the whole weekend live. It's wonderful. Just go to motoamerica.com. You'll find all the different ways you can get to them. Also, you've got NBCSN coverage. They're all over the place. They've done a wonderful job getting our sport out in front of you, the fans. So go out and check them out. This weekend's going to be awesome. Now, here's the latest news in the industry.
All right, PJ, we've got tons of racing to talk about. We had the Supercross wrap-up Sunday night. Three classes were decided, so I don't even know where to start, PJ. There's so much to talk about. Well, but we'll start with the 250 series, and that one just was loaded with carnage. It started in the qualifiers and rolled into the final event. Guys going at it because you've got the 250 East class meeting the 250 West class, and all of those guys fighting for a place on the final gate. So just amazing to watch. Start with the 250 East series. There was a pretty much a run-of-the-mill qualifier race for that. Sexton went on to win, went on to second place. He got into it with one of the Star Racing guys, Colt Nichols, who crossed him on a jump and took him out. I think Nichols ended up with a broken arm out of the transaction. But Sexton was managed, even though he crashed hard, he was able to get back on the track and finish second. That's where it started. It was a pretty epic race, and that's what got them into the final moto. 250 West, same thing happened. The series leader, Dylan Ferrandis, who was carrying the number one plate, got into his heat race to get to the final main event and crashed out in the second turn and ended up dead last. Had to make the main through the LCQ, which he did well. He went out and hole shot and won the race, so he made the final. So that really set the table for that 250 East-West shootout that just really, the battling on the track was amazing. We lost one main competitor. Austin Faulkner went down hard early in the race and caused a red flag. So our guy who's been on the show, McElrath, who had pulled the whole shot with an early lead, ended up leading early and getting a red flag. That's the second time this season that's happened to him. But so they reset, went back on the gate, and Chase Sexton pulled the whole shot and won his title. So in the 250 series, we had Sexton defending his 250 East title and taking the number one plate. And Dylan Ferrandis, who finished up fourth for the evening, ended up defending his 250 West title. So two repeat guys in the 250 class. It was pretty amazing.
That deal with Faulkner was kind of painful, right? I mean, he ended up losing second place in the title chase.
He did lose a position. Yeah, I mean, he went down hard. And I searched the internet for, you know, kind of status where he's at. I've heard everything from broken arm to broken collarbone or worse. But he was able to get up and walk off the track, which was good news. But, you know, he's a guy that was going to line up for the outdoors and really contend. And really, that pro circuit team is decimated now. They're down to one rider, who is Cameron McAdoo, because Marchbanks went down in the last event. So really, that 250 class really came down to the wire, and it was a lot of battling, a lot of bad blood. So when the outdoor season starts, which is in July, it's going to be real interesting to see when those guys all line up and are giving each other the stink eye on the starting line.
Yeah, there's going to be some fireworks at that first event, I have to imagine.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So that was quite an epic event to watch. And really, the night show, the 450 class, was the one I really look forward to. And we predicted it earlier this year. Our guy Tomac was able to bring the title home and win his first Supercross title, finally, after so many attempts. There were so many firsts that came out of that event. He was the first guy to win the title after starting his fifth season in Supercross. He is the oldest to win the class at 27 years old for his first time out. And he's the first father to win the Supercross title, which is really, that's an amazing stat when you think back how long Supercross has been around. We talked about it before, 1972, when it started. He's the first father to win the series. It's a young man's sport, so that's just proof in the pudding. And there he goes and wins it on Father's Day, and he's just recently become a father. So kind of a neat side story for Eli Tomac to pull that off. But he didn't have a spectacular main event. You know, he started okay, kind of worked his way up, passed a few guys, got up to about fifth place, didn't need to win the event. He just had to score more points to kind of build that cushion between him and Cooper Webb, who Cooper Webb also had a pretty awful main event, as did Ken Roczen, who kind of led early and crashed, ended up picking up and finishing up seventh. So the amazing thing to me was watching these the Rockstar Husqvarna team sweep the podium. You had three Husqvarnas on the lead. How about that, PJ?
Yeah, it's insane. Osborne, Anderson, Wilson, right?
Yep, Wilson led
the
early.
Podium.
And Anderson did it without a seat, which I thought was quite an amazing feat. Whoever tightens the bolts on his bikes is probably going to be talked to this morning to figure out what went wrong there. Anderson's, he's not known to go easy on a motorcycle. So I imagine he probably helped that seat disconnect from the motorcycle before the end of the race.
Eli Tomac, all hats off to him. I'm a longtime fan. We talk about him often, and I didn't want to jinx him, and he closed it out, so couldn't be happier for the guy. The other big news, if you ask me, was Reed's final race, right? It was Chad Reed, final professional race, supposedly.
And how about that? The guy finished 10th in his final race. He's 37 years old or 38 years old. You'd have to fact check that, but yeah, what a story. And he kind of hinted at the race prior last Wednesday that he was possibly going to come back next year. But I imagine he's thinking select events just to, make it extra special just for him. What a great career. What a great story. The guy is class all the way, and everybody speaks highly of him. And for him to finish 10th in his final Supercross, I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, it's amazing. And he'll be missed in the sport. Hopefully he does continue to come out and do a few select events. I'm sure he's going to be sought after for the potential next microphone job. He'd be the guy you'd want doing it. He's loved by everyone, a very well-spoken and very intelligent guy. So he's fun to talk to.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. And I hope, who knows, I hope he fleshes that whole idea out. So we have the culmination. We have two repeats in the 250 class and a new 450 Supercross champion. But what season would not be complete without a little bit of controversy after the event? Star Racing, who ended up losing the title to Chase Sexton in the 250 East class, ended up protesting Geico for fuel. So somebody knew something. Nobody's saying anything, but apparently they suspect that the Geico team was running oxygenated fuel, and they put up the money and they called them out on it. So potentially, you may see a change in that final standings in the 250 East, depending on how the AMA rules. They have to go through a testing process where they prove out the accusation and take it from there. But, you know, kind of puts a damper on things a little bit for Chase Sexton, who honestly was the strongest rider in the class. I thought Mick Elrath was going to be, but he didn't have that little bit extra to keep up with him, and Sexton was stronger at the end of the day. And really, those star bikes are amazing, so it just kind of goes to show you how much stronger Sexton is as a rider to beat Shane that easily. Who knows? We may know in the next few days how that really shakes out. That's where things stand so far. So really an epic night of racing, and really just to see Tomac smile and the fact that his dad was there with him, I think it was a great moment in sports. Really, I want to share this fact that Supercross is the first professional sport to complete its series in the COVID era. So that's kind of a little asterisk on the record book that they were able to do that.
Yeah, and it's been an impressive display by the whole crew that puts on our Supercross series, the Monster Energy Supercross series. They did an amazing job to come up with a workable plan and get racers doing what they did, meet all their contractual obligations. I mean, as you pointed out, there's a lot of sports that have not figured this out and potentially aren't going to.
Yeah, and one of the side things that's come out of that is discussion of changing the format for the series in the future. So everybody on the teams, the riders, they really enjoy this format where they're in a city for a period of time and compete in multiple events. We might see Supercross, maybe outdoor motocross, maybe other forms of racing evolve into this format where they can take advantage of being on location. Because as we know, it's not easy to build a Supercross course inside a stadium and do it every week, week in and week out for 17 weeks. That's not an easy undertaking by any stretch.
Yes, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. Of course, road racing, it's a weekend event. Events begin on Friday, wrap up Sunday afternoon, and it gives fans a lot of options. They can come for one day, multiple days, all the days. You get to choose. And I think it, yeah, could totally make sense. That'll be interesting to see if they're able to implement something like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. I actually didn't think about is from the spectator perspective, the ability to choose your day versus, you know, you have to hone in on that one day, get there and get out, and everybody at the same time, where you can spread it out and choose the day of the event that you want to go to. And I think road racing sets a great example by having the major classes compete on 2 days rather than just one day. So that's a good format. You know, maybe that's something that they can call and turn into something they use in the future. Who knows? Just a lot of buzz around the industry that the, as you said, that Feld and the AMA and the teams, they really set a good example and did it right. And the riders and the teams are big fans of it. I think ultimately for sanctioning organizations and such, they need to find a way to monetize that, obviously, because that is ultimately what drives the sport or supports the sport so that it can take place. But, you know, if they could figure that out, that would be an interesting take on how to do the format going forward. And, hey, who wouldn't like to go to a 2-3-4 day event of racing?
Absolutely. I mean, the motocross season has a little more of that feel, right? The outdoor season, if you're an avid fan, you can go camp out or go spend 2 days watching races at whatever race you choose to go to. It's a possibility.
Yeah, and like a lot of the outdoor events, they tie an amateur event to the professional event by allowing them to race the day after. It's pretty typical of an outdoor national to have amateurs on Sunday after the pros have raced on Saturday. So you get the excitement of an amateur riding the pro course and riding the same course that you just saw, you know, your Eli Tomac and Dylan Ferrandez go quickly around on the day before. So that's kind of a neat way to hook people in. And you're right, spend the weekend, camp out, and just enjoy the event instead of rushing in and rushing out. So I think that's kind of a cool way to approach it. And then who knows? I think This is all fertile ground for ideas, and who knows what it's going to morph into in the future with this COVID thing that's affected everybody from everyday life to professional sporting events.
Well, thanks for all the news, Dave. It's been a wonderful way to wrap up a Supercross season, and we look forward to the outdoors now.
Yes, we do. Those are going to start soon, July 17 and 18th at Ironman Raceway. Okay, the Pit Pass trivia question this week is really one we're going to have a lot of fun with, I think. So let me read the question, and then we'll talk about the answer later on in the show, and as I said, have some fun with it. As a racer, when you're transporting your race bikes, we often get the three questions when we're spotted at a gas station or your stop for food or whatever. What are those three questions? More about that later on in the show.
All right, welcome to Pit Pass today. Walter Walker, race official, or am I saying that right? What would you say your official title is, Walter, and welcome to Pit Pass?
Well, thanks, guys. Well, it depends on which company I work for we're talking about. CMRA, it's Director of Competition. With Moto America, it's Deputy Race Director.
So that puts you as the man responsible for what happens on the track. Is that an accurate description of your job?
Pretty much. It's a combination of a lot of different things. Basically, just managing the race day, you know, the schedules and, you know, keeping us on time. And
so, Walter, how did you find yourself in this position? I presume that you, at some point in your history, might have been a racer yourself.
Yeah. You know, it's like most people in this sport. We started out riding bikes ourselves, and my dad bought me a Sears mini bike when I was, you know, I guess I was probably 5 years old, and he brought that thing home. My mother just about divorced him over it, and it kind of went from there. I got into, you know, racing motocross and flat track and that sort of stuff as I got older, and I got into road racing and started working with the CMRA to kind of help pay for that racing. My wife was working for him before I was, and to help pay for my racing. And then it just sort of morphed into stopped racing, but didn't want to get out of the sport, and, you know, started working as official, worked my way up, and ended up what I'm doing today.
So do you coordinate? I'm sure there's a million things that you are literally doing every race weekend, regardless of which of the organizations you're working for. Are you responsible for things like coordinating with the flag crew, that kind of stuff, or is that completely done outside of your purview?
With CMRA, I mean, it's honestly, it's everything from managing as far as signing up, you know, workers and that sort of stuff prior to the event, all the way up to working with my race control guy to actually manage those marshals and then our staff during the events. And then at the Moto America events, as deputy race director, I'm also the chief communicator, so I'm managing all the communications between race direction, which is the race director, the safety officer, and the riders rep, managing those communications through to our track communicator who handles the marshals and flaggers and handlers and EMS rescue and recovery and all that sort of stuff. It's organized confusion, I guess, is probably the best description.
It always is. That's racing in general, I think, Walter. I was kind of curious. You've also mentioned in some bio information that we've read about you that you've done tech also at probably all types of events.
Everything. And that's actually where I started out. That was the first job that I did for CMRA back in probably, I want to say like 98, I think. I volunteered to help out as a tech inspector, and from there it just went on. I mean, I was a tech inspector. I was chief steward. I was pit out guy. I was starter. I was assistant race director for CMRA, and then I sort of got forced to take over as race director. The guy that was Charles Brothers was the man before me, and he just came to me one day and said, "Hey, you're it." And I'm like, "No, I'm not." And he said, "Yes, you are." I told him, "No, I'm not," about six more times over the course of the next few weeks, but he wouldn't take no for an answer. And here we are. Never stopped from there.
So I'm kind of curious, in all those years of managing tech, as we know, racers can be a little bit creative with the rules when it comes to establishing their race vehicle. So I'm kind of curious to ask you, what's the most interesting violation that you discovered on a race vehicle over the years?
Wow. You know, there's so many, but one of the weirdest things that, this was after I got out of tech, but this was just a few years ago. We have a series with CMRA, one of our series within a series. One of the things that's not done a lot anymore in road racing is we do a Le Mans start for that particular race event. And with a Le Mans start, you have a handler, a crew member, or the second rider, whatever, holding the bike. And then the actual rider that's going to start the race has to run across the track when the flag falls or the lights go out and mount the machine, start it himself, and take off. Well, you know, the engine has to be off for the person that's holding the bike, that's holding it from the tail section. We had a team that got creative and they installed a starter button underneath the tail section. So the mechanic that was holding the bike started the bike right before the rider got to it. So to save a little time, get him a good start. So we caught that. This team got a good start, like was the first one off the line every time for the first three of those that I think that we did, and got to take a look at the bike and just really watch. And I just happened to notice the thing started up before the rider actually got on the bike. That was probably the most creative.
So was that a creative interpretation of the rules? It never said that the starter button had to be on the handlebar. It just had to be on the vehicle.
That's exactly right. You know, and that's exactly what crew chiefs are. You know, that's what their job is to interpret the rules and to try to find every advantage that they possibly can. And, you know, a lot of times they're sort of by the letter of the rule, that it kind of fits into that, but it doesn't really fit the spirit of the rule. So, you know, the rule books are an interesting thing. I mean, I'm sure you guys are familiar when they evolve. I mean, almost constantly from year to year. And you could go back through just about every rule book in every form of motorsports, you know, worldwide. Whoever writes that rule book has probably got notes in the margin with somebody's name on it.
More than likely, yes.
Absolutely. It was the reason that rule got created, or that thing got written out of the rule book or written into the rule book. And I know I do. I write the rule book for CMRA. I've got notes going back for years and years and years, and they've got names and names and names of people that, well, this one's here because of this guy, and this one's here because of that guy.
Is the NASCAR team that ran the fuel line several laps around the chassis, they could store a couple extra gallons of fuel.
Absolutely.
And wouldn't have to stop as often, and they would win races. And then they said, well, it never said how long the fuel line had to be. So, yeah, it's all interpretation.
Walter, do I understand you're also, in addition to your U.S.-based activities, you're also an FIM official, licensed official, so that you conduct racing events for the Superbike and MotoGP series when they visit our fair shores? Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, I've for the last several years, I don't even remember how long ago it was that I actually got that. We have to go through a class and take a test to get an FIM official's license, and it's a clerk of the course and a sporting steward's license. It's a requirement to a certain extent to be able to officiate FIM events anywhere that it's an FIM event, but specifically when World Superbike and MotoGP visit the U.S. Obviously, we work in conjunction with Moto America for those events. We usually piggyback as a support classes for those. But I've been running race control for MotoGP and World Superbike for the last few years. At Laguna, when we do World Superbike, I'm the chief communicator for that, timekeeper, managing their schedule, making sure everything happens to the second when it's supposed to happen. And then this last MotoGP, I've been doing communicator for like rider recovery and moto taxi and that sort of stuff. But the last one that we did in 2019, I got moved up to do timekeeping for them as well. So it's a pretty tedious. I don't know if you've ever seen the minute by minute schedules for those things, but everything's choreographed down to the second. I mean, everything has to happen right. I mean, exactly when it's supposed to happen, or you think that you just violated some international law. If, you know, if it doesn't.
Yeah, they're pretty tight on their schedule. It reminds me of, you know, road racing outside of, as you mentioned, MotoGP and perhaps World Superbike, not always that perfectly timed, although I think Moto America certainly seems to be aiming for it. But Supercross, man, you do not get to play with a schedule in Supercross. I think they are very much the same way.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, and a lot of that has to do with live TV and that sort of stuff. And with MotoGP and World Superbike, we're talking about global live TV. So that absolutely has to be to the second. And Supercross as well. I mean, you're fitting in with, you know, satellite upload times and all that kind of stuff. And it's very, 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 very on point. With Moto America, it's been not quite as hardcore, although this last of our season opener at Road America, we were on live TV on a number of different channels. And so we were trying to make sure we kept everything to the second. So I was actually talking to the guys in the TV truck, you know, and they were, you know, coordinate with them to make sure that our start times were on the money and that sort of thing.
From your perspective, what is the biggest, is there any real difference when you're involved with those FIM events? I mean, beyond the obvious, the rigs are bigger, the riders are more famous, you know, and they're certainly going faster when you're talking about GP bikes, the lap times go down. Are there any other big differences?
Well, you know, other than a lot of different languages getting spoken in the room, you know, it's all basically the same thing. It's, you know, it's a lot of people working really hard to just get motorbikes on a racetrack, you know, and so the spirit of the whole thing is really basically all the same from the club level all the way up to the international level. But, you know, obviously there're very real differences in the level of organization, but it's all basically the same once you really boil it down to what it's all about, and that's just putting motorcycles on a racetrack.
CMRA, that's Colorado Mountain Racing Association. Did I do it right?
No, it's a Central Motorcycle Road Racing Association.
There we go. I knew I'd butcher. I'd have to butcher something every show, so thanks for allowing me that opportunity. That's an interesting – what all states then? It's Central then. So what all states does it cover?
Currently, we race in Texas, Louisiana, and Oklahoma. We have raced in Kansas. We're actually looking at possibly going back to Kansas to race at Topeka in 2021. And I'm actually starting to work on the scheduling for that right now. But, yeah, we're three states, occasionally four states in the South Central U.S.
Yeah, that Topeka course is a really nice course. I've done a couple track days there, and the first time I rode there, I was rather impressed by it. I mean, it's got a lot of elevation. It's a fun place to ride, and the spectating there would be phenomenal, I would have to think.
Yeah, it's a nice facility. It really is.
Walter, I'm kind of curious with these with the CMRA, the club racing level. Is it how is attendance? Is that affected by COVID, or are certain controls put in place, or is it pretty much business as usual for you guys?
Well, yeah, you know, I'm sitting in a parking lot of a Walmart right off the highway on my way home from a race weekend. This was our first event back from a shutdown because of COVID-19. We had to cancel two events. We did our season opener in February at this same track down in south of Houston. It was a really good turnout, getting ready to roll into our second event. We were actually at New Orleans. We're halfway through our Friday practice, and the governor of Louisiana shut the state down, basically all large gatherings immediately. So we were standing there with, you know, talking to the track manager, and he's like, man, I can't, we're shut down. And so we had to pack up and come home. And that was the next two events ended up getting canceled because of that. We just came back. This is our first event back. Yeah, we had a lot of things in place that we had to come up with a plan to deal with. Social distancing was obviously the primary goal. Certain parts of the facility we had to close up. We had to do registration in a different way. So we didn't have a lot of people in a room all together. You know, we weren't requiring masks and all that sort of stuff that was recommended. And, you know, we really just told our folks, look, you guys got to make decisions for yourself based on what you feel like you need to do. Nobody's going to laugh at you for wearing a mask and gloves and, you know, hosing yourself down with hand sanitizer. I mean, it is what it is. I mean, this is the new normal. So this is what you got to do. And we're going to do what we got to do. I mean, we're constantly wiping things down and cleaning things up. And, you know, our staff are doing a really good job of taking care of that. And we just asked people to kind of, you know, cut a little, you know, a little extra space between folks. We had to cancel our awards presentations, and we have a party on Saturday night after the endurance race is over. We had to forego that for this event. Hopefully for the next one in a month, we'll be able to get back to that sort of stuff, but we'll see. I think, you know, people are ready to go racing, you know, and I think they don't mind dealing with that kind of stuff because they want to get back on the track. So yeah, we did have some things in place. It was different than, it had a different feel than it normally does, but it is what it is.
You've got a big event coming up this weekend. I'm sure you're on your way home, and then you're right back out to Wisconsin again, correct?
Yeah. Yes, sir. I'm going to get back to Waco in about an hour, and then I'm going to do laundry, and I'm on a plane at 9 o'clock in the morning to go to Wisconsin. Get started for setup up there, and looking forward to that one for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be neat having the fans there. It's going to be so well attended. We're all looking forward to it. It's one of my favorite tracks to have it again. God, the weather. I'm sure you've been there enough. The weather at the last one was uncharacteristically perfect, and I hope it holds for this event as well.
Yeah, Road America is such a beautiful facility, man. The staff there, just, they work so hard to keep that place, you know, top notch. I mean, the campgrounds are great, and that's the best part about it. It's like a park with a racetrack in the middle of it, you know, or going around it. So it's really cool, and the fans there are just great. I mean, the people in town are great. It's awesome. But I tell you, it was so strange, you know, being there a few weeks ago with no fans. I mean, it was just really weird because you're so used to seeing those big crowds there. But we're looking forward to having people there again, you know, for this next one. It'll feel more like home, you know, with the fans there.
Absolutely. And Moto America, and credit to you, you guys did a great job at the first one. It was the first major sporting event that we talked about and saw, and it happened live. And I think Moto America and everyone involved, including you, it's just done a really brilliant job of showing the world, quite literally, that things can move forward. We can keep doing what we want to do, know what we're going to do, love to do. Kudos and hats off to you guys for doing the brilliant job that you are and representing us so well.
Yeah, you know, it takes a village to make these things happen. You know, I mean, and it's there's so many good people that work so hard to put these Moto America events together. I mean, all the way from the top with Wayne and Chuck. I mean, those guys are just constantly working to put things together. And Nicole Cox, she works really hard. She's our kind of the hub of everything, putting everything together. Everything has to go through her to get it all put together. And all the staff, I mean, they just really did everything they could to make this thing work. And we want it so badly to be, you know, to be the first live motorsports, first thing back on track, you know, after this thing. And there was a lot of excitement. I saw that the TV viewership was pretty big, even worldwide, because it went out on the European networks, and a lot of good reviews on that sort of stuff. So, you know, I think maybe if the only silver lining in this whole COVID mess is that it maybe introduced our sport to some people that would normally not ever look at it, you know, being that we were backed up right after NASCAR and that sort of stuff, you know, that, or right before NASCAR, I guess that was people that wouldn't normally see our sport got a chance to see it and say, hey, this is pretty cool. So maybe we picked up some new fans in the process.
I have to believe so. Again, you're correct. There's a silver lining in this cloud, and getting to show the world what motorcycle racing is, people who don't get to see it, it's a big deal. The industry is still, no one would call it a healthy industry since about 2008, but it's sticking around, and it keeps hopefully growing in the right direction.
Right, for sure. I mean, I think it's slowly kind of on its way. I want to tell myself it's slowly on its way back. And, you know, there was a time when, you know, road racing was pretty huge in the U.S. and it's fallen off, and that's a sad thing. But you know, I think, like I said, with Wayne, you know, coming in and Chuck and trying to and putting this thing back together and really, really stepping up the game on, you know, the presentation and the organization level of this, it's really helping bring people back into it. We got more manufacturers back into it, you know, with Cotty having bikes on the grid again. That's really good to see. And it's been really good racing all along. Road America was great. I mean, there was some new faces up there running up front. It was really good to see that. And I think that's going to help. You know, the more we can put that product on in front of people, I think the more it's going to grow. I mean, it's just got to happen.
Well, we all agree, and we are absolutely wishing the best for you and all the series that you are involved with. Walter, we want to say thanks for joining us today. Is there anybody you want to give a shout out to as we're wrapping up our time here on Pit Pass?
Well, just, you know, like I've said it several times. I mean, you know, Wayne and Chuck for all the hard work, Richard Varner, the partners with the Crave Group, with Moto America, those guys worked so, so hard to help grow our sport and put it back together. And then all the club level organizations across the country, you know, the folks with WERA and CCS and AFM out in California, and just, you know, I can't mention them all because there's so many of them, but we're all working so hard to try to grow the sport and get people on the grids and that sort of stuff. And you can't say enough about those people.
Well, right on. Thanks for joining us today on Pit Pass, Walter. We look forward to seeing you at a race sometime.
Absolutely. Thank you guys so much.
I'd like to thank our guest, Walter Walker, for coming on and talking to us today. And let's get back to the Pit Pass trivia question this week. So as a racer, when transporting our race bikes, we often get the three questions when spotted at a gas station or we're stopped for food. And every racer gets it. What are the three questions? The three questions are, do you race? Where do you race? And how fast does it go? PJ, it's had to happen to you.
Oh, yeah. It happens all the time. You're correct. It's funny when we were talking about this question and spitballing about it that, yeah, you can't pull into a gas station with what looks to be a full-on race setup and someone not ask you about it. It's a rare day when you're at a gas station that someone doesn't ask some version of those three questions.
Hey, we poke fun, but those opportunities when people come up and talk to you about motorcycles and start asking questions. I know this question more sounds like an annoyance, but it's not. I take those opportunities now to, query those people. Maybe they are really interested in motorcycles and getting into the sport. So you never know where those conversations could lead.
Oh, absolutely. It's an opener to talk to someone who's obviously interested, which really is all I need. You have an interest in bikes? I do too. We can talk about it as long as you got time. I've got time.
So coming up for the weekend, we've got some big road racing happening. And you mentioned it earlier in the show, PJ. You want to talk about?
Absolutely. Road America Round 2, we're going. And it's the combo event. It is worth mentioning. It's a combo event. They're doing Vintage Moto Fest as well, which in years past has been a standalone event the following week after a Moto America event up there at Road America. So it's really cool that they've rolled those two together. I've been to the Vintage Moto Fest. You get to see vintage sidecars racing on Road America's racetrack. The show is amazing. People come out that are in full regalia as far as old school vintage attire as well as vintage bikes. And Milwaukee just sends some of the coolest custom bikes up there. You'll see custom everything rolling around that place this weekend. So I encourage people to get up there. What do we got going in the moto world?
Well, they've officially now announced some outdoor motocross starting July 17th and 18th at Ironman Raceway in Indiana. Look forward to that. I myself plan to attend that one, and I really look forward to it, provided they allow spectators, obviously. But can't wait to see the big guys go at it outdoors. I love the outdoors. It's my favorite form of motocross. Just seeing those guys battle it out for 40-plus minutes in just crazy conditions. So that and the second round is announced for July 24th and 25th at the WW Ranch in Jacksonville, Florida. So we really have just those two events on the Pro Motocross Outdoor calendar tentatively. So I imagine that more rounds they're talking about are going to be developed, but it's still in process.
Yeah, logistics being what they are, it may take a minute to get the schedule penciled in, but they are absolutely working in that direction, so we look forward to it. Thank you again to our guest, Walter Walker, for joining us today on Pit Pass, and thank you for tuning in. If you enjoyed this episode, make sure to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app, where you'll get alerts when new episodes are uploaded. If you have a moment, please rate and review us as well. We really appreciate it. We want to know we're talking about what you want to hear about. Make sure you're also following us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and of course, pitpassmoto.com, where you can check out our all-new blog.
This has been a production of Evergreen Podcast. A special thank you to Tommy Boy Halverson, Chris Bishop, producer Leah Longbreak, and audio engineer Eric Coltnow. I'm Dave.
And I'm PJ.
And we'll see you next week.
Stay ahead of the pack with the latest racing news and interviews from the Hammerdown Racing Report, your source for regional racing action as well as the national scene. Every week, we recap racing action from all around Northwest Ohio and Southeast Michigan and cover national racing series from the World of Outlaws to NASCAR. Plus, get all the latest racing news. Join hosts Scott Hammer and Ron Miller, along with different featured guests each week. From dirt to asphalt, we have you covered. The Hammerdown Racing Report, available weekly on your favorite podcasting platform.